John Harry Turan, I'm excited about learning about the morphogenic field, something admittedly that I didn't know anything about before we started talking, and I made sure not to research it because I wanted to come in as a listener would come in with just an open mind, blank slate, and find out everything from you, and then come at you with questions that I feel people would come up with as they also hear it for the first time. So my job here is, of course, to represent the listener, to ask the questions. And sometimes we have people writing questions also, which is great. Tonight, they're just coming from me, questions that I'm asking because they come up for me, so I feel they would come up for other people. So my next question is, as we look at the morphogenic field, do you feel that now we've got the work of Newton and Einstein, and then, of course, his nemesis was the quantum theory. Einstein didn't really understand how that would fit in with his mathematical precision that he saw in the universe. And we have the famous quote, something like, "God doesn't play dice with the universe." That was Einstein putting down the quantum theory. And now we have string theory, superstring theory, and we're getting closer, I should say. Physicists, because I'm not a physicist, physicists are getting closer to coming up with a theory of everything. That's what they're working toward, and that's the hottest topic in physics today. What is a theory that will explain everything? The movement, time, distance, planets, everything. And they haven't done it yet. Do you feel that a deeper understanding of the morphogenic field will assist in that?
I think if they ever get to that point, and I don't think this will be the case, even if we go on for infinity, because I have some strange personal suspicions about the universe. Naturally, I could never prove them, but the theory of everything has always been a really, really big thing for scientists. I mean, look, they're working on things right now. The Hadron Collider in Europe. That miles long, where they're hoping to discover all kinds of stuff in subatomic particles, and they are. What will happen when they do get a success, lots of successes out of that? They'll come up to a wall, and beyond that wall is another wall, and another wall, and another wall. And you might say to me, "Well, when do the walls end?" And my answer would be, "They never do." Which reminds me of a story I once said. The reason I'm saying this is because I want our listeners to understand that they're, we go to church. Some churches, they say this. I know I went to the Lutheran church for many years. I was even married to the daughter of a Lutheran minister, and used to I even preach sermons in various churches. And I know one of the things many of them say is at the end of it, they say at the end of their prayer or worship is, "World without end, forever and ever, amen." And I used to think, I'd repeat it like everybody else, because as a little kid, what do I know whether it had an end or not? I mean, just like in Columbus's day, they thought it had an end. If you went too far beyond the horizon, you'll fall off the end of the earth. Now we know that's not the case, and we know we don't fall off we don't fall up. We can only go down. But yet, if you think right across, bore a hole, drill a hole from where I am sitting right now to the other side of the earth, and that person, when he jumps up, he's upside down to me. I mean, these are remarkable things. So I think generations from now, hundreds of generations from now, if we don't destroy this little spaceship we're on, we will still not be able to say exactly what it is. We'll have a tremendous amount of knowledge, but the knowledge never ends. Which, if one were to remember, I talked about Star Trek, one of the shows I really liked, and this was the next generation, where the super being is with the captain, the new captain of the Enterprise, the one that was called Jean-Luc Picard, and the universe was going to be destroyed because some mistake was made, and so Jean-Luc Picard is trying to save the universe. He had to do a lot of things to make that happen. Finally, he succeeded. He figured what was causing the problem, and he turned to this super being whose name was Q, like in the letter Q, and he says, "Wow, Q, thank goodness it's all finished now." And Q looked at him and says, "You just don't get it, Jean-Luc. It never ends." And I think when we're looking at for the theory of everything, 100,000 generations from now, if this is like it still is, and I doubt whether it'll be, there'll be cities throughout the skies all over the what they will say in that time, all over the known universe, and we'll go for a vacation in one of the planets or one of the outer stars. And even then they'll say, you know, we hardly know anything. We hardly know anything. Knowledge is doubling, tripling, quadrupling so fast. And yet, the more we learn, the more there is to know. So I don't think, now this again is personal, not from any of my physicist friends, not from any of my chemist friends, not from anything I have learned from anybody anywhere. It's just a little feeling in my heart and mind and soul that we're never ever going to get there because the journey never ends. Life is forever in different realities, maybe in different alternate systems and whatnot. And when I talk about the word forever, like I mentioned in one of our talks, somebody once asked me, how long is forever? And my answer was long, very, very long. So yes, they're looking for these interactions among the fields, like the and forces. They've discovered their four major forces: the strong force, the weak force, and the other two, which I don't recall offhand. But one is the electromagnetic force, and then there's another one. But it doesn't matter. If they find how to unite these four and how they relate to one another, they think they would have found the answer to everything. And that reminds me in the early days of chemistry when they were looking for the philosopher's stone or the magic wand which will turn lead into gold. They didn't find that either. And now, although we can do it by other means, it's not necessary to do it. It'll cost a lot more than gold does. You know, there's enough gold in the seas, in the seawater, that make it possible for almost all of us on Earth to be millionaires. And yet you might say, why don't we go get it? Because it'll cost 1,000 times the cost of gold to get it from the sea. So, to make a long story short, I went on too long on that one. Somewhere in there is the answer to what you were asking, Steve. No, I don't think we'll ever find the limitations because I think it's unlimited.
Okay. Well, at least we'll have a lot of physicists employed for a long time, looking for it. A long, long time.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering about some more practical applications of the morphogenic or morphic field, as it's also called, as you mentioned, in terms of creating success and happiness in our lives.
Okay, and that's basically what we try to do in these talks. Give the theory, talk a little bit about it for those who are a little bit more curious, but end that kind of theoretical talk and get into the practical aspects of things. I think I might have mentioned before our late dear friend Sun Bear once said, if your medicine doesn't grow corn, what good is it? And if these theories don't have a practical effect, what are we talking about them for? Well, let me give you an effect right now, a practical effect that could come of this. I learned a long time ago, not from physicists or scientists, but from yogis and masters in the study of these things, that most of our problems, most of our disagreements with one another, our daily disagreements, whether it'll be with you and your wife, you and your spouse, you and your significant other, or you and your boss, or you and a family member or neighbor, most of these could be solved much more creatively in our dream time or when we're not totally awake. Maybe when what we do is, again, remember, reality is different in different states of consciousness. And when we are in different states of consciousness, one mind could very easily be in touch with another mind and say, look, there's no need for us in another situation to quarrel about this. Let's work it out now. Now, this might seem like one of the craziest things to do, but I think if a lot of people do this, we will see a new world born within the next month. Let me tell you why. I try it out often. I tend to forget at times. But if there's a very difficult person that we always have big quarrels with, and I don't get emotionally involved in it before I go to sleep, I could start by saying to myself, during this time, I'll meet my friend Steve. Notice I call him friend, even if we had violent disagreements. I'm changing the tone already. I know that Steve is really a great guy, and he really believes in what he's talking about. And I believe very much in what I'm talking about. We just disagree totally, and we're having bigger and more prolonged arguments about this, and it might cost us our friendship. I tell you what, let's resolve this once and for all. Can Steve and I get together in another dimension, in the field, so to say, where we can exchange our views very clearly, and there would be no misunderstandings, and we'll be friends again? And you do that for a few nights when before you go to sleep, and the next few days you will notice that where Steve wasn't smiling at you or me, he starts smiling a little and he doesn't know why. And I start thinking he's a nice guy and I don't know why, because I don't like the arguments we've had. And within a week or two or three, that problem doesn't exist anymore. Now, is that a practical way of solving a problem where disagreements are concerned? Or is it better to sue and take them to court or yell or fight or shoot somebody if we don't like them? This is such an advanced and better way. That's one of the practical uses of the morphic field, knowing it's there, knowing you are free to move around it or relate to it at any time. Remember in Jonathan Livingston Seagull, when the old Seagull Chang turns to young Jonathan and says, you know, perfect speed, my friend, my son, isn't a number. Perfect speed is being there instantaneously and in the morphic field. Perfect speed to any solution, any problem that we think of or haven't yet thought of is accessing that data. If you want to look at this, yeah, I know John's talking about all these things. Must be his background and his multicultural nature and the crazy things he read when he was a kid, and you'd think he'd be matured by now and he'd grow up. Let me show you an example which will say that's not quite true. You go to a big hard drive in the sky. I'm using words loosely now. And it's called Google. It's called Google. You can call it Yahoo or Bing or whatever you want, depending on what are your favorite browsers. It's this giant database. And you go there and you put my name in, for example, John Harry Turan, and think of this. How many people can ever even spell my name? And you will see thousands of references within less than a minute, maybe within 30 seconds. This database, just because I press a couple of keys on my computer keyboard, this database, wherever it is, I don't know if it's in California or it's in Timbuktu or it's in a giant satellite in the sky or somewhere, nor do I care where it is, but this database retrieves me that information. And it goes so far as to guess what information you may need, because there were some times I deliberately spelled my name incorrectly, just with one R, you know, H-A-R-I-C, and you know what the Google thing said to me? It said, do you want to look for this, the correct spelling, instead of that? I'm using Google as an example, or Yahoo, or Bing, or any of the search engines. That's a very poor representation of the practicality of the morphic field. It means if we realize that everything is there, all we have to do, we should reach into it, tap it, and figure out how to make it into something that makes sense, and then we discover, there are ways of tapping into this, and we'll be talking one of these things about intuition, and that's one of the ways, but the silence, we go back to the silence. Becoming quiet, I think we start being aware of roaming the field. I once heard, I don't know where I heard it, but again, it was from Richard Bach. And you know, a lot of my stories about him are about him because he profoundly had an influence on the things I thought about. Not that we taught each other a lot of stuff as much as we remembered similar things. Things that I wasn't sure of and thought I was the only guy on earth who thought about them. I should have known that, knowing about the morphic field. Richard would say them, and I said, oh, yeah, I always knew that. So he was talking this about this story, and it's been a long time since he told this one. So I don't know if I'll remember the sequence correctly, but the data is there. He said this one time. He was, he used to love flying. I think he still does. Richard is in his 70s these days. And he always loved flying. He was a fighter pilot, trained as a fighter pilot. He flew all kinds of airplanes and with strange names. And he said this one day, he's pulling out of this little airfield somewhere. He used to sell rides to people at in the Midwest. He lands somewhere, sell rides for a day, pull out, and go somewhere else. And he said this one day he was in his plane and he's pulling out of this field. And as he started going up, he just noticed, the trees were so close, and he knew he wasn't going to make it. He just knew he was not going to be able to pull up. The airplane couldn't do that, and he couldn't do it, and that he was going to go right into those trees. And he sort of let go of control. And in that moment, he felt that the aspect or the alternate Richard Bach, who knew how to fly any plane magically, took over, and his little plane did something that normal planes wouldn't do. It just sort of like went up vertically over the trees. And Richard said even he was puzzled because planes were not supposed to do that. Now, had it been somebody telling me they were writing a fiction story about the planes and magic, I'd say, oh, okay, and I'll smile and say, Roger to that, thank you, that's good. But this was a very practical thing. It saved his life. So you want to talk about practicality and how to use it? It's very simple to use, but because we don't practice it, we don't trust it, we don't believe in it, we doubt ourselves, that's why we do not hear the voices from the universe. We do not use the powers that we have been given.
Well, that is a probably the best example of something practical I've ever heard, something that can save someone's life. So I appreciate that, John. And I'm wondering about more. I'm just thinking about what the person listening would be thinking now. Just more examples of more ways that we can use this information about the morphic field or the morphogenic field, either term is valid, and apply that in our lives and enhance our experience as we go through life.
As you said that, Steve, I laughed a bit because I remember a story about the Maharishi. I don't know if everybody or anybody remembers the Maharishi, but he was one of Deepak Chopra's teachers. And although I never got to meet him, I was planning to go with Deepak to meet him, but we never got to that. Deepak said he was at this meeting where the Maharishi was sitting down and talking about some of the big plans he had. And another one of the people in the meeting who belonged to Maharishi's group said, but Maharishi, that will cost a lot of money. Where are we going to get the money from? And Maharishi looked up at him and smiled. From where it is right now, was his answer. And I thought, what a practical answer, saying a wonderful thing, but sort of like meaningless to people like me. But then when you think about it, it has a lot of meaning. Where are we going to get the money from? From where it is. So let's go to an example of money. Because I just gave you an example of people saving lives and doing all kinds of stuff. Let's take this, because I think it's a worldwide problem, or instead of calling it problem, call it a worldwide situation today. In the US and in many countries, the economic situation seems to be really, really bad. But all of us, without doubt, have heard or read about people who prospered in the worst times. I read about in the Great Depression, the 1929 thing, where people were jumping out of their office windows because they couldn't stand the loss, where there were a lot of suicides and where the country was in big, you know, there were soup kitchens and nobody had jobs. There was no money and nothing. And things were really, really, really bad. Well, we aren't at that point, and I hope we never get to it. But here's what used to puzzle me, that even in the middle of that, there were some people who were prospering, who were building up wealth, earning tremendous amounts of money. So here we are. Let's talk about ordinary John and Jane Doe. They own, you know, the typical 2.3 children household or two or three children. They are normal job, the normal house in the suburbs with the two cars, one newer than the other, the kids going to the normal schools. But things are tough, and John Doe had lost his job, and his wife found part-time work, and she too now has lost hers. And they've got these hungry mouths to feed, and the mortgage is coming due, and the car payment and whatnot. How in the world would the morphic field help in this? Well, it will help. Actually, if we want to believe or choose to believe, and by the way, belief is a choice. Nobody makes us believe. We choose to believe. And a belief is actually an acceptance of something, whether it's true or false. And true and false could be relative. You know, there are questions asked that you couldn't say yes or no. You got to answer, it depends. So let's say this family is going through this problem. And they say, now, oh, woe is me. What am I going to do, says the dad. And the mom says, I agree. If they were to form together, come to an agreement that, you know, remember the old sayings. There's a lot of wisdom in them. There's a lot of stupidity in others, but again, the choice is ours. Remember this. If they are of certain religious background, pick up some verses here and there that will help. And you start, you go back. If you are a Christian, you go to your Bible and you find it says where two or three are gathered in my name, and or if two of you agree on anything, it will be given to you by my Father in heaven, says Jesus, or said Jesus. And the husband looks at the wife. Hey, honey, that's a nice belief. We go to church, but we never really believe that. Can we try that, you and me? Not deny that we have a big problem, but postpone focusing on that problem and focus only on agreeing that we deserve to have a really decent life and not to struggle that hard. And let's do this, and at the end of it, let's give thanks and say, thank you, universe. Thank you. You have kept me safe so long, you will keep us safe this time. And if you truly believe this, I will bet, I'm not a betting man, but I will wager you 100 to 1 that if you keep that up for a while, now you might ask me, what do you mean a while, John? A while could be 10 years. I'll be long gone. This would have blown up long before. No, no, no. By a while, I mean I have seen cases where it happened in a day or two. I have also seen cases where it took 6 months. And I have seen some which took 6 years. And you might say, well, how come? I mean, what's this with the difference of time? This guy's in real bad need right now. 6 years, he can't even think 6 months. But you see, the time has nothing to do with the law. The time has to do with this person accepting that this is a problem to which there is a solution. And by some means, magical, mystical, by some universal law, this will be solved. I think the minute you make a demand of the universe and you do it with your mind, your heart, your soul, your body, your spirit, your whatever it is you have, if you make a strong demand on the universe, you will find that it will answer that, because you can demand and the universe will supply. Because if you think of a timeless, spaceless existence, as our scientists are beginning to think, we can say that which one comes first, the demand or the supply? And it seems like they're both there. So when you demand of the universe, you're just asking the universe. You're in a quiet way. You're in a meditative, quiet way. So quietness or silence is one of the ways to tap into this law and to use it. And the same family might find a magical magical thing happening. The other day I told the story of the $112 million woman who didn't worry. She was raising five kids. Four were her brothers. Her brother was killed in an accident, and she was just a simple clerk or something, and she won $112 million. When she was in, she was interviewed by Parade magazine. The story was in Parade magazine just not long ago, and they asked her, well, how did you do this? She said, I visualized, I saw it, I believed it, I knew it. And that's how it could become practical, Steve, for people. They've got to work not on the law of thermodynamics or the law of attraction or the law of anything or gravity. Gravity works without us. It doesn't care. It's neutral. They don't have to work on that. Here's what they got to work on. They got to work on belief, trusting the process or trust, and they've got to work on becoming quiet in a noisy internal world.
That makes perfect sense, and I appreciate you, again, so generously sharing the wealth of information that you have, John. Is there anything, as we wrap up in these last few minutes, is there anything you'd like to leave us with about the morphogenic field?
I would like people to forget that the word, to stop thinking about it. I only used it as a name to explain what has been happening around us. The name isn't as important as our knowing, actually, that everything is connected to everything. I started this talk by mentioning the spider's web, and that anything flying into one end of the web will affect, shakes the entire web. That's the field we're in. Anything out there affects everything else. I'm sure some of them have heard that a butterfly flapping its wings in South America will affect the weather in New York the next day or two. Just a simple little thing. So isn't it possible we can retrieve data? Now, not pure, not data such that it is totally meaningless, but data that would help us find a job, heal our bodies, find a good relationship or relationship. Isn't it possible that if we have health problems and we sit quietly and we listen to the symphony of the universe, that it will tell us through our body that, you know, what you need is this vitamin. You lack this, you need it. And if you go and get that and you use it and it works, you'll say, oh my goodness, this is fantastic. I've discovered a new power. But let me say what is going to happen. 99 times out of 100, most people will forget about it. But let me say that 99% of the time, 99 times out of 100, most people, after it's done, will forget about it. So I'll leave you with this little story. The field is there. It works. It will always work for us. It doesn't have a choice except our choice. Don't be like the guy who was working on the roof of his house, and he started falling, and he prayed, and he said, dear God, please, please help me not to fall. And all of a sudden, his bell caught on a nail, and he looked around, and he said, oh, don't bother, God, I caught on a nail. Don't do that with these laws. Just use them. They're pleading with you to use them. They want you to. They're part of who you are.
Well, John, very wonderfully put, as always. Thank you so much for enlightening us about how we can further use the resources that are already available in our universe and use them in such a way that we enhance our lives. So thank you for that, John.
It's my pleasure. I enjoy very much talking about these things because doing so tends to remind me of that which I already know.
Well, thank you, John, and thank you for reminding us, and thank you for enlightening us. On behalf of myself, Steve G. Jones, and my good friend, John Harry Turan, we wish you an outstanding life.